We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College, presented by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. The show presented by Harris Teeter, which is assisting you with groceries this basketball season. And each week, one winner will receive free groceries for every assist through the Big Four Grocery Assist Sweepstakes. Visit harristeeter.com. Look for the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section to enter. Adam, we've got a good one. Good show. Carolina won by 45 points. What? Against Louisville on Saturday. Adam, you know this. One of my all-time underrated Tar Heel favorites, Rayshon Terry. Of course, member of the 05 National Championship team. And then big part of Carolina's teams in 06 and 07 in particular. Rayshon came in and joined us. Looking forward to chatting with him. Carolina's added a game against Marquette coming up just tomorrow night. We'll talk about that and a lot more. Adam, what's up?
Do you ever wish we had a song for Tuesdays? Or is that what makes Friday so special?
I think that's what makes Friday special. Look, we have a Thursday show because every now and then in the summer, we end up coming on Thursdays.
I'm so happy it's Thursday. Throw the ball.
And we have Friday.
It's Friday.
Tuesday is just we're just calmly beginning our week of action.
So we don't need to sign up Lynyrd Skynyrd to perform Tuesday's Gone at the start of the pod.
Be a good one. Look at you. That's a good one.
That's the only Tuesday song I could think of.
I think we have enough songs here on the show.
I don't feel like you've gotten enough attention for the songs accompanying the interviews.
Yeah. The bumps coming out.
Yeah.
Did you get my last one?
Yeah.
It was the Wii Sports because I love the Wii Tennis.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I dominate on Wii Sports Tennis. I'm good on the Wii Sports Golf. Mm. I'm good on the Wii Sports Tennis. I like the baseball and bowling. I'm good at, what am I saying? I'm good at all of them. I'm a multi-sport. I'm Bo Jackson, Adam. That's what I'm saying. Although the bowling.
Jones knows we.
The bowling one will frustrate me. That one will
frustrate. I like the bowling.
I mean, I like it. It's fun. That's what I struggle to say. You know how, like, once you get above a certain level, you're considered a pro? Mm. I'm always right at the line on that one. The rest of them, I've long cleared the pro status. That one, I'm right on the line.
It's that one thing left undone in your life that you'd like to cross off.
And last thing, well, it doesn't have to be. The Wii boxing is a pretty good workout.
Yeah,
like you can get your heart rate up.
Yeah,
I watched more boxing this weekend than I've ever done before. Well, that's probably not a true statement, that I've ever done it, or that I've done in a long time. My son is into like boxing and MMA for some reason. He doesn't even know why. He just is. And so they had hyped up some boxing match on ESPN that came on Saturday night. And Adam, I got to tell you something. So great for my 9-year-old to see. It was one of the most vicious knockouts I've ever seen.
I saw highlights of some knockout this weekend, but I think it was an MMA because once the guy knocked the other guy out, he like got on top of him and tried to knock him out some more.
I saw that one too.
So it wasn't that one.
It wasn't that one.
I think probably your son likes it because they come on late at night and you get to stay up late
and
watch them.
And he is a prisoner of advertising because, like, he actually told me one time that I think it was Conor McGregor, and the only reason he wanted to see it is because he had seen so many commercials about it. Mm. So ESPN, you found your audience. Maybe that's why they split screen all the games, Adam. They realize that it's 9-year-olds that they're going after.
I would enjoy that if on the other half of the screen was Conor McGregor. I would like to apologize to Dick Vitale for absolutely nothing. That's what Conor McGregor said.
That was pretty good, Adam. Hey.
Look, I didn't have time to prepare a Conor McGregor impression. I didn't know he was going to come up.
Hey, Adam, before we get into the game, let me take your mind. Let me relax your mind because you're a little bit hyped right now.
Yeah.
Let me take you to Pinehurst. Mm. Donald Ross's masterpiece number 2, Gil Hans's stunning redesign number 4, Cradle Short Course, North and South Bar, Pinehurst Brewing Company. Never been more to discover at the cradle of American golf than right now. Go to pinehurst.com and learn more. We got some emails saying that the squirrels are in other places. Well, sure they are. I mean, look, that's just evolution. It's not like a species of squirrel can only stay in one golf course. Let's not get too crazy out there. Of course the squirrels are in other places.
It was Andrea Henshaw, and she said she hated to burst your bubble.
My bubble was not burst, because I knew, of course, those squirrels got to be somewhere else.
Well, the somewhere else is the 4 golf courses in St. James Plantation in Brunswick County. Andrea says they are massive, not really afraid of people. She sent photographs that appear to have been taken by the paparazzi, because they're from far, like
they did kind of look like Bigfoot photos. Like, yeah. Like they didn't want to get too close to them. But I understand these squirrels are crazy looking. Fox squirrels.
Britney Spears is standing behind one of them, looking off in the distance on her yacht.
Okay. Adam, I have to say I was surprised by the final score on Saturday. I figured that Carolina was going to have an advantage in the game due to Louisville's long layoff, hadn't played in 19 days, hadn't been able to consistently practice. And I get all of that, and I understand that. And it's a valid point to bring up in this game. However, that does not erase the fact that I thought the Tar Heels went out there and put together maybe their best performance of the year and executed at an extraordinarily high level, shot nearly 61%. Shared the basketball, played good defense, had more points in the paint than Louisville had in the entire game, had a big advantage in fast break points, points off turnovers, second chance points. I mean, it was a complete performance from the Tar Heels. And that was impressive. And then let me just, before you say something, let me just add this in. If the roles were reversed, or if Carolina was playing anyone, coming off a long break with limited practice, you and I would be saying, oh, man, yeah, that definitely affected things. But do you know how much sympathy Carolina would get from any team that it played? None. Zero. So the game snowballed at the end. There's no doubt about that. But Carolina also emptied his bench. I mean, the starters didn't play the last, I don't know, 5-6 minutes, and I don't know regulars were really in the last 3 minutes. I mean, at some point, I mean, you're not going to put in Dewey Ferris and Creighton Lebo as much as we like them. You're not going to put them in with 10 minutes to go. So, yes, was it a part of this game that Louisville was in a difficult situation? Sure. But that shouldn't take away from what Carolina did. And I promise you, if someone has the chance to beat Carolina handily, they will do it. So my point is the Tar Heels didn't do anything wrong. I thought they did a lot right.
It seemed to me Carolina would have beaten most any Louisville team on Saturday. One hot off playing five games in a row, one not having played in 3 weeks, never nervous Purvis and the 86 Cardinals.
Watch out.
I don't know about them. They were good. But Carolina just played really well. That was one of Carolina's best games of the season, if not the best. Louisville, unluckily for them, happened to be the opponent. But I really think that could have been just about anybody, and Carolina would have won the game. Would they have won the game by 45 points? Probably not. And it hurt Louisville that they hadn't practiced, and they were minimally shorthanded, although they got back someone they haven't had all season in Malik Williams. But I don't remember any asterisks by any Carolina losses last year when the Tar Heels had to play with less than a full rotation, and I'm not giving Louisville an asterisk on this one, nor am I putting an asterisk by the Tar Heels, because they needed a big win over another team in a similar spot to them in the ACC at home. They finally got to play at home. They got the win. That's what they needed. On with the season, we move. I'm sorry about your troubles, Louisville. Hope you get them fixed soon. But that's the extent to which I care.
Dayron Sharpe had 21 points and 11 rebounds, including 8 offensive rebounds in 17 minutes. That's really good and efficient. Roy Williams said on his radio show, which you'll be able to hear, you can download it, try to send it out in a timely fashion tomorrow or today, Tuesday, said on the show that he kind of limiting Sharp's minutes because he had hurt his foot, which I didn't know, and they were just being a little bit careful with him, but that he felt a lot better, but that Coach Williams was mindful of that, I guess was his point. Not necessarily that they were limiting or doing anything like that, just they were mindful of it. But he was dominant in this game, Adam. And, I mean, to me, the best number, 10 of 14 from the floor, because not only was he active, but efficient. And sometimes Dayron has been active, but inefficient. And this time he was both, and you see what he can do when he is both.
And Louisville's a physical team.
Yes. Oh, yeah, they're big.
It's not like he was doing this against Boston College and some guys that just got here from Andover Prep. I mean, this was a Louisville team that prides themselves on being tough with you and physically defending. They got back Malik Williams, who was a problem for Carolina in the past, and he was not a problem for Dayron Sharpe in any form or fashion, to the point that he basically just sort of played Williams out of the game, and he would hang out and shoot a three-pointer every now and then, but that was about it. And we've talked about this before. It just seems like Dayron Sharpe, and he said it after the game on the Rapid Reactions pod, that he just feels more comfortable with how to play in the ACC and how to use his skill set in the ACC. And if you can use your skill set to get 21 and 11 in 17 minutes, that's a good use of your skills.
Adam, our guy Kerwini had a career-high 19. He was a big part of Carolina opening up a close game, which it was through the first 10 minutes, and then the Tar Heels went on a 30-11 run to close the half. All 30 of those points scored by freshmen, and in fact, it was the final 33 points in total of the half scored by freshmen. And Kerwin was a big part of that with his shooting 7 of 10 from the floor, 5 of 7 from three-point range. He was named the ACC Rookie of the Week, 4th different Tar Heel to do that. Love, Davis, and Sharp have also earned that award at least once. And we don't need to explain that we love Kerwini.
I think what's so impressive about Kerwini is that he was a nice story when he was sneaking up on people. He's not sneaking up on people anymore. He is the number one shooter on every opposing scouting report, and anytime he gets the ball, everyone on the opposing team yells, "Shooter!" And they, I'm sure, emphasize, "You must know where he is all the time. Don't help off Kerwini." That's what they say in the huddle. And he's still doing it. If anything, he's doing it at a higher clip than he was before as he gets more comfortable.
I feel like if the Tar Heels could just get one, one more between Love, Playtech, and Davis to consistently hit some threes, right? I mean, they've all had good games. And RJ Davis was 2 for 4 from three-point range in this particular game. He had been, I think, 1 of 11 in the previous five. Caleb Love, who I've made very clear, I think is getting better and playing better, has not shot the three particularly well. In this game, he was 1 of 4. And then Andrew Playtech, you feel like he gets a couple open looks, and they just hadn't consistently gone in. I feel like if they could get one more to complement Kerwin Walton, who has been pretty darn consistent to the point where he's shooting over 50% from three in the last, I think, 7 or 8 games. Gosh, I just feel like that would make Carolina a lot more dangerous.
Well, I think at that point you're talking about a Final Four type team.
Right.
You've got two. I mean, you could never have two Kerwinis, but you've got Kerwini plus lesser or imaginary Kerwini. And then you've got what we know.
You may set the record for the amount of times the word Kerwini is said.
You have to be very careful
with this pod.
Yeah. Well, we'll switch over to Muffin Top now. You've got Muffin Top and imaginary Muffin Top around the 3-point line. And then you've got what we already know Carolina has in the post, which is more than basically anyone in the country. That's a squad. So I think the challenge is piecing it together without imaginary Muffin Top and still getting Muffin Top his shots. Another impressive thing about him is he never forces it. You never feel like he's hunting his shot, partly because every time he shoots it, I think it's going in. So he could shoot it from anywhere, and I'd be like, that's a good shot for Kerwini.
I'm telling you, he's getting up there in the annals of Tar Heel history already of players that, just what you said, when he shoots a three, I'm thinking, oh, well, that's going in.
I was watching him before practice the other day, and I can't remember who told us this before the season. Maybe it was Roy Williams. About how weirdly his ball spins.
Mm-hmm.
It really does spin incredibly weirdly.
You know, oddly enough, Adam, I don't want to keep giving too much away about this Roy Williams show, but he talked some about that, about how he watched Kerwin shoot in the preseason and said, yes, it does have some odd form and odd spin. And then Coach Williams saw how often it went in and how consistently it went in. And he just said, you know what? I'm not going to mess with that at all. We're just going to let that be.
Well, and I tried to watch him to figure out where it was coming from, like where in the mechanics is making the ball do that, because it spins unlike any shot I really think I've seen. And I don't see it. So, but whatever he's doing, I'd like to teach everyone else how to do it because it's working. I also like that every once in a while, he'll just sprinkle in a little drive.
Well, I think Coach Williams was asked about that after the game on Saturday. About, oh, is this something you guys have been working on with him? And he said, look, that's giving the coaching staff too much credit. He said, Kerwin Walton just works on it. And we told him that he needs to eventually diversify his game some because, you know, teams, as you referenced, are going to know who he is at some point. And it never blows you away, but he is effective and efficient and either can find his way to the basket or hit a mid-range shot. And he's not doing it all the time, but he's doing it enough that you know that it's there. And that's all he needs when he's as consistent a shooter from the outside as he, to this point, has proven to be.
Well, and you know, we should probably mention, it's possible that Puff Johnson could have been secondary imaginary.
That's
Kerwin.
A great point. Yeah. I mean, Puff Johnson has been dealing with a toe problem and has missed, well, I think we're up to 7 or 8 games now. And yeah, it's just hard to. Coach Williams said he thought Puff was going to start shooting some. But I mean, that should tell you how far away he is from being able to see the floor. And it's hard to imagine he's going to give you any significant time this year at this point. You hope that he does, but don't know.
Well, and I know people who watched him play in the games this year are thinking, well, I saw him play and he didn't look like much of a contributor. What did you think about Walker Kessler?
Right. I think it's a great comparison because Walker Kessler suddenly has gone from a guy who's, you expect to play 3 or 4 minutes, to now a guy that, Adam, I think you think, okay, well, he's going to play 10 to 12 minutes. And more importantly than that, the minute number is he's going to affect things positively when he's out there.
There were certainly times when he played in the first 2 or 3 months of his Carolina career where once per game you'd think, oh, he looks a little outclassed. It's been a while since you've thought he looks outclassed. It's more the opposite, just what you said. He looks like someone who has an impact on the game. I can't imagine Roy Williams could possibly be any happier with the level of effort that he's giving. He dove on the floor against Louisville and called that timeout in the first half, and Roy Williams was even happy that they used the timeout. Like, that's when you know Roy Williams loves you, buddy.
Yeah.
When you can use one of his timeouts and he's okay with it, you're in rare company. But he does that regularly. That's not the first time we've seen him put forth that kind of effort. And when you're that big with that effort, that usually equals good results.
Seems like he and Sharp are getting a little bit of chemistry when they're out there together, too.
Which I think it gives you a nice alternative. If either the Bacot-Brooks tandem gets in foul trouble or just isn't having a great game, what a weapon to be able to turn to your bench and have two other big guys who the other team is concerned about, not just guys filling space or taking up minutes in the box score. These are guys that have to be game plan for both offensively and defensively, really. And that's a nice luxury.
Yeah. One more thing about Walker Kessler, who, you know, we love. He's a good shot blocker. I think Carolina on paper, you would think, oh, this could be a good shot blocking team. It's been an okay shot blocking team. I think he changes the game in there like John Henson did. Like, it's hard to score when Walker Kessler is challenging that shot.
The timeout came from a block shot. He had blocked the shot earlier on that possession in kind of an unusual place. Like, you don't see many block shots.
That was like mid-paint.
Yeah, like a little off to
like
the
side. It's like a floater that he blocked.
I mean, I'm sure, I don't remember who shot it from Louisville, but I'm sure they thought, like, this is a reasonable place to shoot a floater.
Right.
And then here swoops Walker Kessler like a condor from out of nowhere and blocks it right back in his face. That was probably pretty demoralizing.
8 blocks, 11 steals for Carolina in this game. Just really active defensively. And some of that came when Louisville was making some very dispirited passes late in the game. But, I mean, I thought the play that summed up the game to me was the final play of the first half. You know, Garrison Brooks with the effort to knock a pass away on an inbound with a couple seconds left. Love hustles, gets it, dunks it emphatically at the horn. It's just, I thought that summed up the whole game and how Carolina played in this particular outing.
For both sides.
Yeah.
And I thought, too, this isn't going on anybody's highlight reel, but the sequence in the second half when Carly Jones and Caleb Love just decided to start stealing the ball from each other all the time.
That was weird.
To not give up in that sequence and to keep playing, I thought was good. And we've seen that a couple times this year where maybe Love commits a turnover, but then he runs back and blocks the shot.
Yeah.
I think that's a good sign.
Man, I think these are four really important games coming up because you and I have said this. We feel like the Tar Heels are getting better. They're going to get some chances to see where they stand, and I think the Louisville game was one of those, but I think they're going to get some chances here to see where they stand in this improvement. And most importantly, they're going to get a chance to do some of it at home with Florida State and Duke. Florida State, who I think is the best team in the league, and Duke, who's we're recording this before they play Syracuse Monday night, but who seems to be playing better here as of late. So I think those are big games.
Well, and I think we heard Clint Gwaltney say the Tar Heels would like to schedule another game in between Syracuse and Duke, which we assume would be at the Smith Center and we hope would be an ACC game, because there's some ACC games hanging out there that haven't been made up that could be important in the standings.
Well, I also think, though, Adam, and I agree, I mean, that's the desire. And maybe the Marquette game will feel differently, but I do think that Northeastern game was a big plus, not just playing not just winning it, but playing it. So we'll see. I mean, you can play 27. Carolina's scheduled to play 24 right now.
And Roy Williams said after the Louisville game he wants to get as close to 27 as he can, with good reason. I too, think you just got to play games. You haven't gotten to play many games. The more you can play, the better. Ideally, they'd be ACC games. But if those teams have other plans, if they've got to wash their hair, then you go find somebody who's available.
So, Adam, that leads nicely into the fact that the Tar Heels are going to play Marquette coming up on Wednesday. It was announced a couple hours before the game on Saturday that the Tar Heels had added that game. Marquette plays in the Big East. Steve Wojciechowski, former Duke guard, former Duke assistant coach, is the head coach at Marquette. And, you know, the Eagle, Golden Eagles are 10-12 overall, which obviously is not a terrific record. But they do have some nice wins. You know, they beat Wisconsin early in the year. They beat Creighton early in the year.
Good.
They, you know, had close losses out of conference with UCLA and with Oklahoma State. They have struggled a little bit here as of late in their last 8 games. They're 2-6 with both their wins coming against Butler. But I think a couple things. One, a team that very clearly is capable, and when it is playing well, is a dangerous team. You're not going to beat a good Creighton team or Wisconsin if you're not capable. A team that has some name value to it, because I think most basketball fans at least are aware of Marquette. A coach that's going to know a lot about Carolina. Steve Wojciechowski certainly understands how the Tar Heels like to play. He's seen it forever. So I think this is a really good, this is a good challenge for Carolina. Again, I'm not claiming Marquette's the Lakers coming in here, but I think it's a good challenge for them. And again, another game that can help you if you win it, and another game that can help show you your progress and how much you're making.
I think what you said is an underrated part of this matchup, which is Marquette will have an extensive scout on the Tar Heels, both Wojo's knowledge of Carolina past, and they'll probably get some pretty good reports on Tar Heel personnel this year from other folks, which will help them a lot, because when you're playing this random game against a team with which you're not familiar, Carolina won't have that on Marquette. They don't know Marquette's personnel. They can, you know, they'll put together a good scouting report, but it's different than what Marquette will have on Carolina. So I think that makes it a nice challenge. Also, what you said, they are capable. So I think there was this feeling that unless Northeastern just got red hot from three, they probably weren't going to win in the Smith Center. Marquette's capable of winning in the Smith Center without doing something outrageous.
Sure.
If Carolina doesn't show up, and don't be so fooled by a 45-point win tied for the second biggest in the Roy Williams ACC era that you think the Tar Heels are now good enough to just show up. I don't think they're that good. I think they still have to play. And they need to play consistently. And that's something that's been a problem this year. And this is a prime time to show it's not a problem anymore.
Dawson Garcia, somebody Carolina did have a recruiting relationship with, is a freshman. He's the leading scorer and rebounder for Marquette, averaging 12.5 and 6.5. DJ, I think it's Carton. They're a guard as a sophomore who is right up there. Scoring-wise, those two are actually separated by just one total point on the season. So they are two of four double-figure scorers that Marquette will bring to the Smith Center. So good game. Good game, big game. Tar Heels feel like they have some momentum. They need to keep it rolling.
Do you think there will ever be a time that Carolina plays Marquette that people don't think about the 1977 championship?
Absolutely not. We had a question about it on Coach Williams' radio show. He talked some about that loss. I think along with the 2016 national championship game, those are probably the two most painful losses in Carolina history. Now, some of that is because it's a national championship. I mean, you're going to, well, a large majority of that's because it's a national championship game. You're certainly going to find some regular season losses that improbable, that hurt. The 84 game against Indiana because of how good Carolina was that year. I mean, there's Syracuse 87, games we've talked about before.
Utah
98. Yeah, I mean, games.
Creighton.
Games we've talked to, even a win. Games that we've talked about before. But in that 77 game, before your time, before my time, but that Carolina team had fought through so much adversity, had a bunch of injuries, a very likable team. Phil Ford, of course, one of the headliners of that one, and came up short in the championship game in a game that they led in the second half. And then, of course, we know what happened with Villanova in 16. The only difference, really, I think, is that Carolina didn't have a substantial lead in the second half. Tar Heels had come back, as we all know. So the answer to that is no. It is always going to be at least a nugget of information when these two teams get together.
And Carolina's played Marquette since then. Tar Heels played them in the 11 NCAA tournament.
Sweet 16, yeah. Buzz Williams was that coach.
Nobody ever thinks about that game.
Yeah, Tar Heels crushed them that day. Hmm. That was their last win that season because they lost to Kentucky, who couldn't shoot threes but made a bunch of them in the Elite Eight game. Not that we remember that. That was in Newark, New Jersey. That was a sweet stay in that airport hotel for a week. Okay.
Good pregame meal, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Adam, anything else before we get to our convo with Rayshon Terry?
I know people are upset about the free throws. Tar Heel's going to shoot 300 free throws again this week.
Yeah, Coach Williams said it in postgame that the lowest percentage for any player in that drill was 79%. Now, one thing that is hurting Carolina in that regard is that their guards aren't shooting a lot of free throws. And so, I mean, if we said, okay, Jones, Adam, who do you want shooting the free throws? I mean, percentage-wise, I think you choose Caleb Love. You would choose R.J. Davis. You'd choose Kerwin Walton. But they just haven't been to the line. I mean, Walton shot fewer than 10 on the season. It's Garrison Brooks and Dayron Sharpe and Armando Bacot and Walker Kessler here recently, naturally, who are shooting the most free throws. And you know, Dayron's in a difficult mental area, I think, for free throws right now. I think it's in his head a little bit, and it's understandable when you have had a tough stretch like he has. Garrison, we've talked about this before, has always kind of been hot and cold. I feel like at the free throw line, he'll go through some stretches where he'll go 20 of 22, and then he'll have some where he'll go 7 of 18 or something. So I'm sure he would like to be more consistent and is trying to do that. Armando is a sneaky one because I always feel like Armando Bacot's going to make the free throws, and then all of a sudden he's had a game where sometimes he doesn't. But none of them are bad shooters. Even Kessler, who really had trouble early in the year, has been much more respectable here lately at the line. None of them are bad shooters with bad form. We've both seen guys who have bad form at the line. I don't feel like any of them have like form that is going to keep you from ever being good. They're just not going in consistently right now from the big guys like Carolina would like and like they would like.
I think the book on Sharp is going to be Fallum pretty, yeah,
you have
pretty
to.
Soon.
You have to if you're the opposition. You have to, right? I mean, he was 10 of 14 from the floor and 1 of 5 from the line against Louisville. Now, the problem is that you get into, if you're the opponent, is he's strong enough to just knock you out of the way and finish even if you foul him. So,
well, I think the book on him is also keep him off the offensive glass.
Right.
Well, how successful has that been? The book doesn't always work.
That one offensive rebound that he had the other day where he caught it and finished all in the air, that was good. I thought that was a good basketball play by Dayron Sharp. You know who else had plenty of good basketball plays during his time at Carolina? Rayshon Terry. We had a lot of fun talking with Rayshon. He's been playing overseas, gosh, for a long time. We talk about that, all the different places that he's been, and always enjoy talking with him. We're going to get to that in a moment, but let me remind you that there's no sense in letting outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel game action this year. You can let LS Tractor help make short work of them. That's normal yard maintenance. That's larger projects. LS Tractor has the machine for you. The website, lstractorusa.com. LS Tractor, what is it about for you? We're going to talk to Rayshon Terry. Come back. We'll have Adam's list and more after this on the Carolina Insider.
Today's interview has been a long Jones request.
I'm very excited for this interview. One of my favorite all-time Tar Heels, like under the radar, awesome Tar Heel, my guy Rayshon Terry in here with us today.
How you doing? This is me. What's going on, man? How's everything?
Man, we're doing. No, that's what we need to be asking you, Rayshon.
Oh, man, this is, life has been a roller coaster this last year or so with COVID and everything happening, especially for me as far as basketball is concerned. But, man, I've kind of been, this COVID has taught me a lot. Like I said, I'm just taking it all in and, just try to roll with the punches here.
It's taught you a lot, like what?
About myself. just life that I've missed since I've been away for so long, because I'm usually in season at this point in time of the year, And, you know, like I say, man, it's even with my kids and everything like that, just being able to be home and see how they grow up and how they're evolving, it's been a journey.
So, Rayshon, for those who don't know, just where all have you been as your basketball travels have taken you to a bunch of different places?
Do we have enough time in this podcast today? No, but for starters, I started out in Greece. And then after that, I played in Italy. After Italy, Spain, France, Germany, let's see, Ukraine, Lebanon, Japan, South Korea, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, and I think that's it.
That's 12 different countries.
Yeah, that might be it.
That's probably it.
What was your favorite one? Where did you like living the best? Not
living,
necessarily
living.
The basketball.
Okay, living. I'll have to say Lebanon. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but I mean the social lifestyle over there is very very unique. Let's say Germany is one of them, and also Japan. I love living over in Japan also.
Do you speak 12 different languages?
No.
What have you liked about seeing the world in that way? And then what have some of the challenges been about being in so many different places?
I mean, I think the likes, of course, is, just being able to experience different cultures and, just to see, something different from each country, different aspects of life and how people, how they live. And if I would have to say the dislikes, it would be having to adapt to the culture.
Yeah.
The language barriers and, the selective choices of food and, just being away from your family for the most part. I think that's probably the biggest dislikes, I would say.
Could you have ever like if I had if 18-year-old Rayshon Terry was sitting here and we're like, Rayshon, one day you're going to be in Lebanon and you're going to like it. Right. I mean, would you have ever fathomed that?
No, I never thought that I would be playing overseas, to be honest with you. But I think that's been a blessing in disguise for me. And it's made me appreciate, not only just the overseas basketball, but just like basketball in itself, because, a lot of people get caught up, or kids, I should say, get caught up in it being just, NBA, NBA, NBA. But, man, like I say, overseas has really, really gave me an insight on, just appreciating basketball and still being able to do what you love to do and provide and take care of your family. So, I wouldn't trade it, honestly, if I had to do it over again.
When the coaches yell at you, do they yell in their language or in English?
It just depends on how bad you mess up. but we usually, in countries that – most of the countries that I've been to, fortunately for me, they've been able to speak English. But the countries that I haven't, that I've been to that where they don't speak English like that, we usually have translators, so it works out for us.
Did it take you a year or two – to come to be okay with the idea that, this is pretty cool?
More than just a year or two, because I was still chasing the NBA dream for a long time. And then, it got to a point in my career where it was like, I'm okay. I'm okay with, where I'm at, basketball. And just as far as my career is concerned, I was able to blossom and just, really, really have some, something to hang my hat on, even though everybody wants to play in the NBA, but, unfortunately there's not enough space and enough roster spots for everybody to play in the NBA. So for me, I'm very content with how my career have turned out.
Was there a moment or anything that you kind of embraced that? I remember we talked to Deion Thompson, this was over a year ago, but Deion talked about how you know, at some point he just realized how much he enjoyed that aspect and said, you know what, I like my life being like this. Was there a moment where you kind of embraced that, or did it just kind of happen gradually?
It just kind of happened gradually because, you know, like I said, I was just so high on NBA. You know, this is all we know.
Right.
As Americans, we only know NBA. So, you know, like I said, it was just something that just kind of happened. Like I said, I wouldn't, looking back on it now, I probably wouldn't change anything.
You literally have seen basketball all around the world. Of those places you went, where was the best basketball?
Now, since we're talking basketball, I probably would have to say, as far as competition, I would say France. France was probably, like, up there with like, you know, those elite leagues. And close to the NBA as far as talent, because you have a lot of the French guys over there that are really, really athletic, and you know, the basketball IQ and the level of play is really, really, you know, high level. So I would put France up there, Germany, and even for me, I like South Korea. South Korea is a really high level type of basketball.
All right, let's go back to young pup Rayshon Terry in high school in Winston-Salem when I think it was Matt Doherty, right? Matt Doherty's the one who offered you the scholarship. Yeah. Take us back to how that relationship got going and how you found your way to Chapel Hill.
Well, I mean, you know, just like every kid that's coming up in the ranks, you know, they have a name for themselves and have a little backing behind them, you know. I don't even really know how to put a beginning to it. It's just like, you know, something that kind of evolved, you know, through the AAU circuit and, you know, getting a name for yourself. And, you know, they took a liking to me, you know, because, you know, Carolina's real big at recruiting in-state. So, you know, Coach Doherty was, like I said, he was very fond of me. And, you know, I had a couple of grade issues, you know, and he was telling me, like, you know, we don't really, you know, consider guys that aren't taking, you know, the schoolwork as serious. Yeah, you're good at basketball, but, you know, it happens in the classroom first, you know.
Right.
So, you know, they kind of drifted away from me for a while because of that. And, you know, and I took a big notice to that, you know, and, you know, I had to do a little soul searching within myself. And, you know, I got it together, got a great support system around me. And, you know, they did a terrific job of keeping me grounded and making sure that I knew how important it was for you know, the academic part of it, you know, and not just the basketball aspect of it. But, you know, when I got it together, they kind of came late in the game, because a lot of people don't know, like, when I committed, I initially committed to NC State verbally. And, you know, like right the day that I was making my decision, Carolina called just out of the blue. And, you know, they found out that I had my test scores back and everything was good in that regard. So, you know, they called as I was making my right after I had made my verbal commitment to NC State. So I had to decommit from them. And, you know, Coach Doherty, of course, he offered and I took it. You know, because that initially was where I wanted to go anyway, but I was like, you know, well, it doesn't look like Carolina's going to come anymore. So, you know, I guess I'll, you know, take my second best choice. So that's how that kind of happened, you know, and, you know, I definitely don't regret it.
What was it like to tell NC State I'm coming and then not very soon after that have to tell them I'm not coming?
It wasn't difficult. It wasn't that difficult at all, to be honest with you. I think the more disappointing part was that I had to tell my high school coach that I wasn't going to, because he was real big on just, you know, staying firm on what you decide and everything like that. So I think it wasn't too bad for me to take it back and make that decision.
What was it like to hear somebody tell you, "We're really impressed with your basketball, but you got to get your school stuff together"?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't flunking or anything. It was just wasn't good enough for them.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, it was just an eye-opener and just put things in perspective for me, and it really let me know how serious, you know, it was to be a student athlete as opposed to an athlete then the student. So he kind of lit that fire for me, to be honest.
So Coach Williams, so before you ever got to Carolina, there was the transition from Coach Doherty to Coach Williams, right?
Exactly.
How did your relationship with Coach Williams begin?
To be honest, it really wasn't that good, you know, because like I said, I didn't even know I had no clue, like, who he was, you know, because all I knew was Carolina, like, you know, Carolina and everything like that. And Matt Doherty, I didn't know who Coach Williams was or anything like that. But, you know, honestly, I didn't care because I came for the school. So it wasn't going to, like, change my decision on, you know, going or transferring out or anything like that. But like I said, it was kind of rough, you know, being, you know, a player for a coach that didn't recruit you because you don't know what his intentions are for you. And
sure.
You don't even know if he have intentions for you. So it was kind of difficult initially. But I think, you know, the relationship kind of, you know, meshed and, you know, worked itself out.
Once you got here and that relationship started developing with Coach mm-hmm. Williams, you walked into a team that had some talent.
Yeah.
As those opening practices unfold and you realize what else is on the team, what'd you think?
I mean, I knew coming into it because when I was in high school, I was coming down to play with these guys like on the weekend. So I knew what I was getting myself into and what I was signing up for. But for me, you know, when you're a competitor, like that doesn't matter to you. You know, you know where you fit in at. And, you know, I knew I probably wouldn't be starting, but I was like, you know that I probably would be in the rotation. You know, I think situation would have been a little different for me had I played for Coach Doherty, you know, as far as my freshman year is concerned. But it didn't happen that way. So I still, like I said, I still had a lot of high expectations coming into my freshman year, man, because I knew what I brought to the table.
So national championship your sophomore year, just what's that experience like?
You know, we as a team, we knew that we had the pieces and we knew we had what it took to, you know, do some damage in the tournament. But, you know, we were just missing a few pieces. And I think when, you know, when we realized that we were having, you know, we were bringing in Marvin and Quentin, it was pretty much sealed the deal for us. And, you know, sure enough, we approached it, you know, my sophomore year, which was the national championship year. We approached it that season as such. Like, we knew we had what it take.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had what it took to win everything, and we just approached every single day from the end of my freshman season all the way up until the very start of that sophomore year. Like, we knew we had what it took to get it done.
We had Tyler Hansbrough in here not long ago, and he was talking about 09 versus 05.
Right.
He was on the 09 side, not surprisingly.
Of course.
What do you think?
What do you think? You know, I think it's a little biased there. But for me, I just felt like, man, we were so stacked that year, man. Like, and I think the level of competition even then was a little bit more, an edge bit tougher, you know, as far as the schedules and, you know, the play, the style of play, man. But they probably would give us a nice run, but I think overall we would definitely come out victorious if you had to choose from the 09 and 05 team.
What was your mindset, Rayshon, that next year? Because you ended up going from, I think it was like 2.5 points a game to 14.5 points
right.
per game and became a starter and
right.
you know, played so much more in that 06 with that big freshman group with Tyler and Bobby and Marcus Skinyard
right,
and all those
right,
guys.
Right.
What was your mindset? How did you approach that season understanding that it was an opportunity for you?
Well, I kind of knew like that was going to be my year. Because I sat for 2 years, you know, and like I said, when you're a competitor, man, and you want to play and you know what you bring to a team, like, it's just, It was one. I just had to look at it as paying my dues. I just kept looking at it, and I that was my motivation, you know, getting through those years. And, you know, it was paying off for me, you know. We won the national championship that year, so there wasn't too much for me to complain about. But I knew once everybody left, that was going to be my opportunity. And, you know, I approached it that way, and I never looked back after that as far as just, you know, being such a prominent player, you know. And like I said, I only had 2 years left, so I had to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you knew what you were getting into with that 05 group.
Mm-hmm.
When the big freshman class shows up and there's this big dude from Missouri out there,
mm-hmm.
what kind of impression did Tyler Hansbrough make?
Oh, he made his impression from the very first day of pickup. You know, he came to leave his name, and that's what he did. Tyler has been nothing but as advertised from, like I said, from the very first day that he walked into the doors. And, you know, and he lived that all the way up until, you know, today.
You had, okay, I'm trying to think. There was a dunk on NC State.
Was that on Andrew Brackman?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
There was one, I think, against Maryland. Didn't you have one really good one against Maryland? And I know there's one in the NCAA tournament against Murray State.
Murray State,
yeah.
Do you have a favorite Rayshon Terry dunk?
The Murray State is by far my best one.
How come?
My favorite, because just I was angry that game. I was angry that game because it was just, you know, I wasn't playing white. I mean, I wasn't playing well, and you know, I was trying to you know, get it going, and it was just a bunch of frustration. And then, you know, like I said, to have that dunk and then the capture of the picture, it was a great photo.
So
beautiful, man. So if I had to, you know, name a favorite one, that one would be.
And then, Rayshon, now correct me if I'm wrong, you had a big ACC championship game, right, the next year too, right, in 07, is that right?
I don't really look at it as having a big game. It was just...
You had some big shots.
I had some big plays that game, I'll put it that way. I had some big plays.
And that was down in Tampa, right, against NC State?
Right.
Yeah. And then that season ended with the Georgetown loss in East Rutherford. Is that right, in the round of eight?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that game?
Man, that game was like a blur to me, honestly, because, you know, I was coming off of the extreme strep throat that year. Well, during the last two games of the tournament, man, and, you know, it was just it was really tough for me, you know, those last couple weeks, you know, of my senior year, man.
I feel like the first time we ever got to see what Rayshon Terry might really be was towards the end of your sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
There was another player who was a starter at your position who missed several games.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to play a lot more while he was out. What was that like? And what did you think was going on with that?
You know, every day, honestly, I was praying that he, you know, he would mess up just so I could get some playing time, man.
Well,
you know,
look, Rayshon, prayers answered on that right, one. He did right. plenty of messing up.
Right, but you know, I wasn't, like I say, man. I knew the talent that I had in front of me, and I was appreciative to, you know, just be in such a, you know, the same breath as those guys, man. You know, and it was like I said, it was definitely an experience and a journey, and I'm just happy that I'm a part of history.
When did you realize that you were, like, more athletic than 99% of the dudes you were playing against?
When I got here.
Really?
Yeah. When I got here and, you know, the things that we were doing, you know, in the weight room, thanks to Jonas, my guy. You know, Jonas, he just pushed us to a level that mentally we didn't even feel like we could ever even accomplish. Like, he would lie to us about lifting weights. Like, you know, oh, this is, you know, this is only 40 pounds. And when we get finished, he was like, yo, you just lift 80 pounds. It's like, you know, he would just do little simple things like that, man, to just help us. And, you know, he never let up. And I think, like, you know, that was huge. That was a huge factor into me just really, you know, taking off and just understanding, like, the sky's the limit for me. And, That was uh, Yeah, like I said, when I got here, that's when I realized I was real, really gifted.
What is the best part of being a Carolina basketball player, and what's the hardest part about being a Carolina basketball player?
Obviously, the perks that come with it is the best part, you know, and just the appreciation from the fans all over, not just in America, in Europe, you know, everywhere I go, like I get, you know, a few people that know, and they appreciate that, and that's amazing. That's mind blowing to me, you know, that people outside of America still follow, you know, they have favorite colleges and stuff like that that they follow. So to be a part of that, man, is just great. I guess the bad thing about it is just like for me, I've never been a limelight type of person. Like I've always tried to be under the radar, and you know, just to when people, you know, you can't control who comes up to you or anything like that or who likes you or whatever. But
sure.
I think the recognition for me is probably the bad thing. It's not really a bad thing, but it's like I don't like to be in the forefront. So I think that's probably the little bad thing about it.
To us, you're always Rayshon Terry, Tar Heel basketball player.
Right.
But kids might not know you that way.
Right.
When they find out, oh, that guy I just know is Rayshon, he played for the Tar Heels.
Right.
What do they ask you most often? What do they want to know about?
Who did I play with? You know, what team was I on? Did I win a national championship and all of that stuff? So those are the kind of questions I get asked a lot.
What carries the most weight, winning the championship?
Yeah, of course. You know, that's all they carry. Like, you know, and I think that's a great thing about being a champion, you know, because it's like, okay, you can, that's your bragging right, you know. People want to know, like, they love champion, they like winners. So, you know, when you let them know, like, hey, I play, you know, or they ask me a question, for an example, like, hey, what team you guys played for, or what team were you on? And then I say, I was on the 05 national championship team. And they were like, oh, really? And it's like, oh, man, so you're a national champion, man, that's great, da, da, da. So I think, you know, it's you know, it's a beautiful thing, man. And like you said, like, it's one of those things, like, you know, like, especially if you're a Carolina basketball player, like, you're going to always, no matter how old you are, you're going to always be special to people. And that's why sometimes, like I say, I don't like to be in the limelight like that, but you have to appreciate it because, you know, people are crazy about Carolina. So I just have to, you know, take it all in stride.
Frazier coming front court. Skip pass, Terry.
Goodness gracious. Good to see Rayshon. Appreciate his time. And the interview brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. You working on your 5-second challenge for Thursday, Adam?
I'm ready.
At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field, but with your eyes closed. Look, none of us would do that. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone while driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. TrustedChoice.com and find an agent near you. Adam, we of course normally have our UNC Health Champions Watch dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. And of course that comes in the second show of the week where Adam's looking ahead. There were plenty of champions on the field and the diamond and the pitch, all kinds of places this weekend for the Heels.
Congratulations to the Diamond Heels and Scott Forbes, his first weekend as Carolina's head coach. Tar Heels go 3-0 against James Madison. They've added a game today against Elon, and then ACC play starts with a light one against Virginia.
Yeah. So they're playing, I mean, everybody. I think it's 12 ACC series this year. Normally you play 10, and so to try to, you know, keep the, I guess, the testing levels or whatever equal, that you're adding two more. So, I mean, what a bloodbath that's going to be for everybody, not just Carolina. I mean, what a stretch.
Because the ACC is loaded.
It's always good. I mean, Georgia Tech's good, and Miami's good, and Clemson's good, and Florida State's good, and NC State's good, and Carolina's good. I mean,
Duke's good now.
Yeah, Duke's good this year. Virginia's good. I mean, there are, yeah, that is going to be a grind. So whichever team comes out of that, I mean, you've earned it.
Well, and I think you're not going to see many sweeps, I don't think. And so I'll be interested to see how that affects ACC teams for NCAA tournament consideration, because in some of these conferences, you can go sweep three or four conference opponents. You're probably not going to do that in the ACC, I don't think. Maybe that'll happen. Women's lacrosse got two wins. I watched some of they beat Florida on Friday, and then on Sunday they played High Point.
Yeah.
I watched some of that game on the ACC Network.
Which one? The High Point game?
The High Point game. They were both were on the ACC
yes,
Network,
they were.
Weren't they? I watched High Point. It's remarkable how much better Carolina is, and I understand it was High Point, but that's a Division I team.
Right.
Carolina, even to someone who doesn't know anything about women's lacrosse or lacrosse in general, it's obvious Carolina is a lot better than the team they were playing.
Yeah, I watched actually a little bit of both of those games.
Oh.
No big deal, Adam. I was just out there doing my work, you know, just prepping for the show. And I had the exact same thought, but during the Florida game, who was number 7 in the nation. And it was to the point, I mean, Florida's a really, really good team. And they were, according to the people talking about the game, because shockingly, they were talking about the game.
Why were they doing that?
They were saying how Florida, you know, actually kind of changed what they normally do just to try and deal with Carolina. I mean, I think, and I will say, there are some athletes on that team who are fast.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it's like watching Roy Williams fast break basketball in lacrosse. Like if they pick up the ball and a loose ball or something in front of their net, all of a sudden, poof, they're gone and they just outrun everybody. They are impressive.
It reminds me of what I imagine Carolina women's soccer must have been like in the mid to late 80s.
Right.
When they were just a step above. And we don't know if Carolina women's lacrosse can win the national championship. Certainly there are two or three other really good teams. But Carolina's really, really good.
Yeah.
Softball got some ACC wins. They opened up. They're just playing ACC games all the time also.
Yeah, so they were supposed to play 6 games. One of them got rained out. They played 5. They went 4-1. Beat BC both games they played. Beat Syracuse 2 out of 3. Women's tennis, they're now 10-0. They have won 28 straight dual meets or matches. So just when they're going against one other team, they've won 28 straight. That's a school record. That's pretty good.
I think if they had been on the ACC Network, we would also be talking about the difference in their ability level.
Men's lacrosse beat Richmond, first road win of the year. Gymnastics won twice. They won a quad meet with Pitt, Towson, and LIU Brooklyn. And then they won a dual meet with Temple.
What's the mascot of LIU Brooklyn?
They are the Blackbirds, Adam. The only reason I remember that is Carolina played them, oddly enough, in the 2011 NCAA tournament. That was in the round of 16, though. Or, excuse me, the round of 64.
That tournament's been a hot topic on this pod.
Yeah, it was. Then the Tar Heels beat Washington when John Henson tipped that inbounds in late. Mm. That was a dicey game. That was in Charlotte. Then Marquette, then Kentucky. Mm. That was one of those dumb years that UConn won. Congrats on your 2 dumb championships, UConn.
We're going to revoke those now.
No, come on. I was, Adam, this is totally off the board here. We've talked a lot about the Blue Bloods this year. Like, who do you consider Blue Bloods?
Well, I evidently don't think about this as much as everyone else seems to.
Right.
Because they really seem to think about it a lot. But I think Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, and I guess Duke.
Okay.
That's it.
So you don't have UCLA and Indiana in that discussion?
No, not anymore. If we had been having this talk in 1995, yes.
Right. And so then you get these teams that are like Michigan State, Arizona, and...
Virginia really wants to be.
Now, come on.
Uthel Wilson played there, Jones.
I'm not even going to entertain that question, Adam. What can I give one more side note? If Carolina had lost to Duke in Durham and by 1 point, and hadn't called a timeout, A, and B, had no play at all other than your 5'9 point guard to chuck up a three-pointer against a 6'9 defender, I'm going to guess that the head coach of the Tar Heels would have got some heat. That's just a guess.
Well, and your three best players don't shoot over the final 90 seconds or so.
Yeah. Didn't touch the ball very much. Right. Yeah. Your last two shots were not by Hauser or Huff. Yeah. Or Murphy.
Right.
Yeah. I digress. So, but what made me think of this is UConn. So then you've got UConn and Syracuse and I think some other teams that are in that area. But it, if one team had an argument, it would probably be UConn.
Yeah.
They've won a lot of national championships since, I mean, they won in 99, they won in 04, they won in 11, and they won in 14. That's impressive. Now, again, 11 and 14, the tournaments got absolutely blown up, but that's the sport. That's the game. That doesn't matter. They did what they had to do.
I think the reverse of UConn is Syracuse.
Right.
I think they get more credit than they have earned when you actually look at it.
Yes. They have one title in 03. And they're but Adam, they're in New York State.
Right.
They get a lot of coverage. They have a coach who's been there a long time that people know. But I don't disagree with what you're saying.
And I'll put Arizona in that discussion with them.
Yeah. Arizona's what? They got the one title, right?
Yeah.
In 97.
So why is
it? But, I mean, let's be honest. Michigan State's only won since Magic. They got one other one.
Right. To me, I don't know why the Blue Bloods have all of a sudden become this discussion that we have to think about all the time. But to me, that implies.
I mean, Adam, UConn has more than Arizona and Michigan State combined.
Yeah. It's got to go back past 1980.
Right. And not that we have to sit here and, you know, stand for Coach Williams and Carolina basketball, but that's when you should realize how unbelievably successful Carolina and, I mean, Duke and Kentucky and Kansas are. I do think it is worth remembering that.
How are the Blue Bloods doing this year, Jones? That is an important topic.
I know one in Chapel Hill that's coming on, Adam.
Okay. I haven't heard anything about them, but I heard there's another one coming on.
Stop trying to make me angry, Adam. We're already towing the line today. We'll let you go to your list. That'll calm you down.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Okay. NCAA tournament, 25% fan capacity. That was a little surprising.
I was very surprised by that. Yes, I was surprised by that.
Well, I was surprised because all that really matters is getting it on TV financially. That's why it's being held. So it seems like a bit of a risk to have 25%. I don't know anything about the health implications, but I know that 25% of Lucas Oil Stadium is a lot of people, especially if you're going to put them all in the lower deck, which I'm guessing you are, to make it look better on television. So it was just surprising. But no fans at the ACC tournament. General public.
Right. So here's another thing, Adam. There's only 2 weeks left in the season, regular season. Then it's ACC tournament time. It is what a strange journey this year has been.
I enjoyed the story in the Baltimore newspaper about the Lynn Bias game at the Smith Center. It was the 35th anniversary recently. Hmm. That reminded me that we had Lefty Drizel on the pod.
Yeah, we did.
I'm Lefty Drizel. See you later, Big Grits.
April 20th, 2018. So that was kind of early on. If you didn't hear that one, he was good.
He was good.
Recommend you going back. And he talked about that game, of course. Speaking of folks who were on the pod, Mitch Mason was on the pod September 21st of 2018.
I'm Mitch Mason. See you later, Big Grits.
If you haven't, I think we've talked about his health struggles on the pod. They're sort of ever evolving, and there was a recent update. So if you haven't been following that, encourage you to check in on him and see how he's doing. His interview was great on September 21st of 18. We got an email about pickleball, which is a very popular sport, and we recently discussed pickleball with Anson Dorrance.
Yeah, we did. He was coming by and signed the board for us. He was here doing something else and was kind enough to sign the board.
And discuss pickleball with
yes.
us. Yes. He is...
off the air.
Yeah.
We didn't record it. We wanted him to feel free to speak his mind.
Yeah, it was off the record. Gil sent us an email and says, pickleball is a very fun activity for all ages. He had delayed checking it out because he had heard it was for the elderly who could no longer swing a heavier, longer tennis racket, which is partially true, says Gil. Also, Gil had no access to any pickleball courts until he was invited by some friends, perhaps Anson Dorrance. The difference between tennis is a smaller court than tennis, but still played with a net. The paddle is basically an enlarged ping pong paddle with racket-style grip. The ball is an oversized wiffle ball. Generally, play as doubles, although Gil thinks singles is doable too. Scoring gets a little complicated, and he's not going to get into explaining it to us. Probably a wise choice. Only played it a handful of times. Quite fun and easy to pick up. Sport has grown a lot in the past decade. So... there you go. If you can't come to the Carolina Insider for your pickleball news, I don't know what you can get.
I seriously would like to play pickleball.
Right now?
Not right this second, but I would like to try it out. I just want to try it.
Well, call Anson Dorrance. Yeah,
call Garrison Brooks.
I thought this was a good idea by the Atlantic 10. The Atlantic 10 is going to tweak their basketball tournament.
I saw that the head coach of Richmond was mad about this.
Yeah.
Because I guess it was supposed to be in Richmond and now it's not.
Yeah, well, yeah, they changed some sites, but they also changed seating. Teams above 60% of the median number of conference games played by all 14 teams, got all that, will be seeded by conference winning percentage. Teams below the 60% threshold will be seeded using the net ranking relative to all A-10 teams. Basically, the A-10 is acknowledging not everyone's playing the same amount of games, which I thought was an interesting idea.
Yes. However, well, I'm going to guess that if they've got a fair amount of teams that have played below 60%, that they've had a right. lot of trouble. That's a lot of that's a big chunk of games.
Right.
And then secondly, and I just to prove that I'll stay on this even when it's good for the Tar Heels, I think the net is a dangerous thing to use this year because it does fluctuate so much until you get a heavy number of games. We talked about this on Friday. Carolina went up 20 spots in the net with that win over Louisville. Now, is that good for the Tar Heels? Absolutely it is. But that's crazy to think that one game, and you may be saying, well, they won by 45. Well, the net caps, the margin of victory is taken into consideration, but I think it's capped at 10. It's either 10 or 15. So 45 was impressive, of course, but it in the metric didn't really matter that much compared to if it was, it didn't matter at all compared to if it was an 11-point win. So I just think it's dangerous to put that much stock in that ranking or that metric this year. Having said all of that, they're just, I'm sure, just trying to go off of something that is centralized, if you will. And so they're just trying to find something.
At least someone at the A-10 office is awake and paying attention to the fact that there's a different amount of games being played. That's a good idea. Last thing, email from Patrick Niddle. He says, if you ever find yourselves needing a segment on the pod, he would love to hear any stories you may have on guest reactions to when you ask them to say, see you later, big grits. Do some already know what you mean? Are some completely clueless and think you're crazy? Any bloopers involved? Patrick wishes he could say he's in the 100% club, but he thinks he's around 97%. Got to go back to 2016 to make sure he listened to all of them. That's when we were using just cans with strings attached.
Yeah, so... as we've discussed before, Adam has become the gatekeeper of the Big Grit story. So he has to tell the story to every guest to explain to them what we're asking them to do after we have done the interview. Now, this whole virtual interview, the Zoom type of interviews, has added a different wrinkle to it, Adam, because most of the time in the past we had done our interviews in person. So we still do some in person, masked up. But a majority of them right now are via Zoom or some other type of application like Zoom. Hopefully we get back to the point where we're doing most of them in person. However, I will say I think it's opened up the door for us to be able to talk to other people. So anyway, that has given it a different wrinkle, Adam, because you have to wait for the delay. And we've only got the one webcam in here, and so you, Adam, can't really see the people. They can only see me. And so without that visual cue, I know Adam's like most stressful 2 seconds are when he hits the punchline, and then he has to see if the person gets it, finds it funny, or if they just think Adam's stupid.
Yes. And you get used to when someone's there in person, you can see the cues that they at least understand.
Right.
What you're talking about, and that this is not the most serious thing in the world, but it's going to end up being funny if you'll just stick with us. And I always worry that they're sitting there on Zoom, like sending out text messages or something, and then I finish and they don't realize that I'm done. And I say, "You want me to do what?"
Yeah, it's always better when you get like a and a big grits. Like, what? Like when they're engaged in the story.
When they want to know, when you start out with the, and then Eric ordered big grits. When they give you, what is that?
Yeah.
That's when you've got them hooked, my friend.
That's when, that's like when you were talking to Mark Blucas. He was fascinated by the big grits.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever turned down the big grits. We've had a couple people wary of it because I think for some reason they thought it was silly.
We've had a very small amount that have gone, whoa, wait, does everybody do, like, are you going to, is this going to like make me look bad? But I can count on like one hand, and honestly, I'm not even sure I remember who they are. A large majority of people are happy to do it. Every now and then that it's not quite right, or they'll forget to say their name, and so we ask them to do that. But most people nail it on the first try. Most people.
The people who know Eric are the most willing to do it. When you run into the very, very rare person who isn't sure who Eric is, that's when it's just not quite as funny if you don't know who Eric is.
Right.
But the people who know Eric, and it helps when they're in here because we can point to the board and say, oh, all these folks have come before you and done it. And then they see random names scrawled on the wall and they think it must be okay.
Adam, bringing up the Bluke Dog made me think about something. I think it's fair to say that he's a strong candidate to be in a potty nomination. Mm. But does he fall in former player category? Or does he fall in non-athlete category?
I think he's non-athlete.
Okay, because I think he has a stronger chance of being nominated in the non-athlete category than he does in a former player category.
Well, I guess the question goes back to, why did we have him on the pod? Was it because he played at Wake Forest?
Right.
Or because he was in a very important Christmas movie?
That interview, I know I come back to it every now and then. For some reason, that interview made me really happy. Just a good interview. Look right here. I've got some names. I'm like an AD in case I ever need to make a coaching hire.
You're like Clint with his list.
Yeah. I've just got a running list of when I think about people, either right when they happen or maybe later on, I think, you know, he does. I'm going to put him on the list as a possible consideration for a potty later this year.
You got to be ready because you never know when you might have to nominate somebody.
I mean, Adam, I'm going to put something in perspective that's going to wow you right now. So the potties are in approximately 4 months.
Wow.
4 months ago, Adam, was like Halloween. Like Tar Heels were playing Virginia in football about that time period. That didn't feel like that long ago.
No.
From that point until now, it's the same amount of time as now until the potties. So just be thinking, Adam. Just be thinking.
Spaceship Earth is turning faster than I ever imagined it would.
Okay. There were a couple tweets I wanted to mention real fast. Son of Odell said, did you know that Big Grits has an entire town named after him? And sent us a screenshot of the video board at Boshmer, video board / scoreboard thing at Boshmer. And one of the players for James Madison came from Montross, Virginia. I was aware that this town existed. That town is pronounced Montrose, though, Virginia. So it's like medium plus grits. Not quite big grits. I mean, the spelling's right there, so you have to give it credit for that, but it is pronounced differently.
Population in 2019, 431.
Population, one. And he likes grits. Elizabeth Eford sent us this tweet. My youngest daughter is like Corey Alexander. She talks constantly about anything other than the game. She finally got into cheering when she thought it might be a biscuit game, and in spite of our sportsmanship explanations, she is having none of the dribble out. Some Tario fans were frustrated that they didn't get the Bojangles at him.
Well,
it's been a while.
And the Tarios had opportunities.
Yeah, KJ Smith missed a couple of shots. Dewey Ferris.
No,
Dewey Ferris could have been a legend. Tarios have not hit 100 since 2019, Adam. February of 2019, when they put up 113 against NC State.
If Dewey Ferris had hit the biscuit shot, would we have had him on the pod?
I think we should have had a ceremony had he made that, where Dewey Burke handed the Mr. Biscuits title to Dewey Ferris. But alas, that shot came up short. I think Dewey got too excited. He was like, oh my gosh, I may put this in.
Yeah.
Last year, first time ever, Roy Williams has had a year where a team didn't score 100. And now, I mean, that may have been their shot at him. It's going to be hard to, I mean.
Don't you say that.
I mean, hopefully the Tar Heels are putting up 100 and something here soon. But I mean, that was as close as they've been in a while.
It's harder to do in the ACC than it used to be because you've got so many teams that Roy Williams was on a podcast with Gary Williams here in the last week or so. And I think the way Gary Williams described it was you got some teams that just want to walk it up and that's how they play defense.
Yeah.
I think that's not too far from the truth.
Okay, Adam, I'm going to try to play this in real time.
Oh, whoa.
So, I don't know.
Tuesday's gone?
Yes, the end of show. So, you may have seen that the Hornets had a dramatic victory over the Warriors.
Yeah.
So, you may remember that we were talking about the TV announcer, which we have since learned. His name is Eric Collins, for the Hornets. All right, let me see if I do this right. Cameron sent this to us, a couple people that sent this to us, but Cameron did, wanting to know if this was the announcer, and the answer is yes. Let's see if we can get it to work here.
All right, Hornets don't have a timeout. Chance to win it right here. Rozier, gonna have to put something up! Yeah!
Love that guy, Adam. And I'm going to tell you, that one was big. That wasn't his biggest, but that one was big, but not the biggest one I've heard.
Is that his signature phrase, how do you do?
I don't know. I kind of like it. I might steal it. I like it. I like the call. Great win for the Hornets. Did you see the end of that game for any reason?
I saw that shot that you just played the highlight
of. You didn't see any of the lead up to it?
No.
It was crazy. All right, I'm just going to give you a quick update of what happened.
Okay.
So Kelly Oubre for the Warriors hit a three in the corner and blew a kiss to the bench. That put him up by five.
To the Warriors bench or the Hornets bench?
Just the bench area. Probably okay. To both areas.
Okay.
So that gets it to five. Rozier, who's out of his mind, by the way, former Louisville player, he's been a good pro his whole career, but he's like playing at a different level right now. He's just going crazy. So he then, on the other side, hits a three, got fouled. They didn't call it. But so that made the score a two-point game, if I remember. I think that's right. So somehow it got to the point. So two-point game. Okay, now I'm back on track of what happened. Then there was a tie-up on the Warriors. So Warriors have possession. Hornets tie them up. Originally, the officials are going to put some tall player for the Hornets, I can't remember who it was.
Robert Parrish?
To jump it. Wow, he did play with the Hornets. To jump it up, and then they decided that it was actually LaMelo Ball who was going to jump it up against Brad Wanamaker for Golden State. So they tip it up. Neither really gets good control. Gordon Hayward grabs the ball and gets credited with a timeout, which I think they gave it to him right before he then very obviously kind of got tied up by Draymond Green. And they're like rolling on the ground, both hugging the ball. But I think they gave him the timeout before the tie-up. Well, Draymond Green, who we know, Adam, is a bit of a hothead, goes absolutely crazy. This is a two-point game, keep in mind. Gets double teed up.
Wow.
Thrown out of the game. Rozier hits both because he got two free throws, made them both to tie it, and then made the shot that you just heard to win the game. It was a crazy final sequence.
Wow.
Yeah.
All I saw was the end, and I vaguely saw something about Draymond Green getting all fired up.
Yeah.
But he always gets all fired up. That reminds me about, we talked about Jerry Stackhouse last episode. He's had an eventful time since we last talked to him about him. So Vanderbilt lost two games. They lost to Kentucky in a close one at Vanderbilt, in which Cal throws up the peace sign to Stackhouse. Mm. Stackhouse doesn't like this and gives him the wave off.
Oh, boy.
Then flash forward to Saturday, Vanderbilt's playing number 8 Alabama, Crimson Tide, allegedly the 8th best team in the country. Vanderbilt leads, I think, pretty much the whole game and was up relatively comfortably in the second half. Jerry Stackhouse gets a technical foul. Alabama goes on a 14-4 run. Alabama wins the game by 4. But as we talked about, I think all these things are things you get with Jerry Stackhouse. But don't forget, he also had them in position to beat a Kentucky team that is playing well now and has more talent than Vanderbilt, and Alabama, the 8th best team in the country. But you're also going to have some of these other things. When Cal threw up the peace sign to Stackhouse, I thought we were about to get some throwdowns at Memorial Gym. But he just he gave him the wave off and then walked off the court.
Okay, now here's our breakdown of Providence versus Creighton from this weekend. The show brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, reminding you to practice your 3 W's, wear, wait, wash. Marquette, welcome to the wash. We resolve to keep North Carolina healthy. Adam, anything else before we get out of here?
Wear, wait, wash Wojo.
7 o'clock, that's going to be Adam's job. 7 o'clock on Wednesday. We'll be on the air at 6 p.m. for Carolina and Marquette. We will have video pod on Thursday. We will have rapid reactions pod on Wednesday night. We will have a new audio pod on Friday. Pod. But for now, we're going to let Rayshon Terry, who was here in the room with us, so he very much understood the Big Grit story. Rayshon Terry and the RZA going to help get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Rayshon Terry. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.